All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are taking a deep dive into the reasons and causes behind the Falcons' offensive struggles in 2021 and what ways Arthur Smith can make adjustments and make improvements to get things back on track in 2022.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, here as part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And like all Locked On Sports Atlanta shows, Locked On Falcons is free and available on a variety of podcast platforms, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, as well as on YouTube. And we thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. If you check us out on YouTube, you get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. Also want to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Blue Nile. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On listeners get $50 off purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement. Just use code Locked On at checkout. So today's episode, we will be answering a question that a listener submitted for yesterday's Twitter Tuesday Q&A that, you know, initially I thought would be, you know, I could make a, you know, 10-minute segment out of the show for that, but I realized I had a lot more to say on it. So I decided to punt it to today's episode and really take a deep dive into it. The question comes from Michael Russo II at Captain Russo 1 on Twitter. He asks, not sure if you've covered this before, but why did it seem like Dirk Koetter was a better offensive coordinator in 2020 than Arthur Smith in 2021? Watched 2020 highlights recently, and it just seemed like our 2021 offense was buns most of the season compared to 2020, where at times we were all right. And so, yeah, Michael, I agree with you in that sentiment. We talked about this a bunch, but we'll go over it again now that we've had sort of 6 months of, you know, to unpack this stuff. But before we get into that, to answer your question, Michael, I do want to give a disclaimer for everybody else that may be checking out today's episode. For those of you that sort of look at or are going to listen to a lot of criticism of Arthur Smith on today's episode, and if you feel like Arthur Smith is above criticism, probably today's episode and maybe even this entire podcast is not for you. If you look at, you know, last season and think like there's something off about last season, then this is the episode for you. And, you know, I say this because, you know, people are going to feel compelled to jump in the comments and defend Arthur Smith, and that's your prerogative. It's free country, or whatever the case may be. You're going to feel compelled to give him a pass for various reasons because of, you know, it's his first year or hit the team lack talent or whatever the case may be. But if that's your compulsion, I feel like you're kind of wasting your time. Towards the end of today's episode, we will talk about how and why things should and could be better for this Falcons offense in 2022, but that's going to be, relatively speaking, a much smaller portion of today's episode than the parts where we're going to be critical of him. And so I don't have a problem with people disagreeing with me. I don't have a problem with people challenging some of my opinions. It is just kind of frustrating for people to be kind of upset with the format of the show. You know, now that we're entering year six of me soloing this podcast, I know part of that is due to having a relatively new portion of audience members now over the last 8 months that we've been on YouTube. But it's just one of those things where, like, this podcast is going to be critical of things like this. And that's what this show is for. Like, if you want a podcast that's going to sit here and daily affirm how great the Falcons are and how great and wonderful Arthur Smith is and Terry Fontenot is and approach everything from that perspective, this is not the show for you. So do with that information as you will. But getting to Michael's question, you know, I think the main issue was that I think Koetter did a better job in 2020, especially maximizing the team's top two playmakers, which is Julio and Ridley. That was exemplified in their explosiveness. And when we're talking about play calling, I think explosiveness is kind of the core and key of what we're talking about, because no one's sitting here saying, oh, Andy Reid's a brilliant offensive coordinator because he got a 6 yard gain on a 2nd and 8. It's Andy Reid's a brilliant offensive coordinator because he got a 30 yard gain on a 2nd and 8. So when you go back to 2019, 2020, you know, you often saw Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones cooking. It did take Dirk Koetter a while to figure out Calvin Ridley in that 2019 season. I remember doing an episode either after the week four loss to the Titans or the week five loss to the Texans, talking and complaining about how he wasn't utilizing Ridley right. But soon thereafter, he was able to figure that out, and Ridley was off to the races from that point on. And what's interesting is you go back to those 2019 and 2020 podcasts here on Locked On Falcons. I spent a lot of time, particularly ahead of the 2020 season, talking about how it was critical for the Dirk Koetter and his play calling to be able to maximize both Ridley and Julio, that opposing teams had to go into each week feeling like this was the most fearsome duo of wide receivers if this team was going to reach their maximum potential and be a playoff team and be a team that potentially could make a deep postseason run, because when you looked at the rest of the roster, it wasn't necessarily playoff caliber. And obviously we didn't see that, you know, happen in 2019 and 2020, in part due to injuries to Ridley in 2019 and injuries to Julio in 2020. Notably in 2020, there were 8 games where Ridley and Julio were healthy and playing together. But on only 4 of them did you see both of those guys having at least one explosive play in those games. And so it often was the case a year ago where Julio would cook this week and Ridley would cook the next week, and they just kind of alternated, and you never saw both of those guys, you know, cooking at the same time. And so that was a big reason why those offenses didn't feel like they reached their full peak, and led to a lot of people being optimistic about what Arthur Smith would be bringing to the table and being able to get that out of that. And so when I look at those 2020 offenses, I look at it like they certainly weren't operating at 100% efficiency, but let's say they were operating at maybe 70% efficiency. And it didn't look like Arthur Smith was doing that a year ago in 2021. And I think mainly that's due to the fact that he was not able to maximize this team's top playmakers. That's exemplified in Calvin Ridley's, you know, relatively poor performance to start the 2021 season. Ridley played 5 games and only had 3 explosive plays in those 5 games. And you compare that to the final 5 games of 2020, where he was often without Julio Jones, you know, that number was 11 explosive plays in those final 5 games. And while 8 big plays does not seem like a huge number, especially in over the course of 5 games where you're having like 300 some odd plays, but over the past decade, I've tracked, you know, how many points the Falcons tend to score on drives that include explosive plays. And on average, it's about 4 points per drive on drives that include 20 plus yard plays. On drives that don't include one of those explosive plays, about 1 point per drive. So, you know, 4 points on 8 drives is potentially 32 points. And that's a significant difference, because if you look at where the Falcons offense ranked in scoring output through, you know, week 7, when Ridley was still with the team, you know, they were 19th. If they had scored another 32 points through those, you know, first 7 weeks, you know, they would have ranked 6th in scoring output. And then you look at guys like Kyle Pitts and Cordero Patterson, who were the 2 main weapons, sans Ridley. And Pitts did lead the team with 16 explosive plays. Patterson was 2nd with 10. Most of Patterson's came over the course, all of Patterson's, I'm sorry, came in just 6 games. 8 of his 10 came in just 4 games. And, you know, that's not a huge issue for Cordero Patterson, given the role and position that he played. So you're not expecting him to generate 20 plus explosive plays like you saw regularly with Ridley and Julio in previous years. So that's fine. But it just is indicative of sort of a handful of games where Patterson was really cooking. And the same is true of Pitts, where 9 of his 16 explosive plays came in just 3 games. And so for the remaining 13 games that Pitts played, you know, excluding the week 18 game against the Saints where he was hurt, he had just 7 explosive plays. And 5 out of those 7 did come in the month of December, in those final 6 games in the month of December. So that is a positive indicator that things were trending upward for him and he was being more integrated in the offense. So that is a legitimate excuse that, you know, given that Pitts was a rookie, it may have taken Arthur Smith a little bit of time to integrate him and figure out some of these things. So that is pointing, you know, the arrow is pointing up there in that regard, but it still doesn't, you know, dispute the fact that, you know, for the basically the first 3 months of the season, outside of a handful of games, the team's 2 most dynamic threats and 3, if you include Ridley in that mix, were not really being maximized in the offense. And I think that sort of speaks to what we often talked about last year, that despite Cordero Patterson having a career year and despite Kyle Pitts having this historic rookie season for a tight end, in a lot of ways, it felt like there was a lot of meat left on the bone in this 2021 offense. And, you know, for me, when I look at a healthy NFL offense that's generating explosive plays, they're generating maybe 3 to 5 explosive plays every single week. 4 is kind of the ideal, or 4 or more, I should say, is the ideal. In 2020, there were only 4 games where the Falcons had 2 or less explosive plays, and in no games where they had 0 explosive plays, while in 2021, there were 8 games where they had 2 or less explosive plays and 3 games where they had 0. So when you go back and look at, you know, 2019 and 2018 and previous years, you saw numbers comparable to what we saw in 2020 as opposed to 2021. So 2021 was relatively unique in the fact that the Falcons really struggled to generate explosive plays in a large number of their games. And I think a lot of that was due to not having Julio Jones. And this was something we talked about 12 months ago, where, you know, a lot of Falcon fans were insisting that, you know, the Falcons offense would not skip a beat without Julio and all these various things. And I kind of looked at them like, really? You really think so? And we talked about this, where the stability that Julio provided, particularly when it came to these explosive plays and that volatility that gets introduced into the offense without his presence there. And basically, the thing I pointed out 12 months ago was, like, without Julio in the offense, we're going to need Arthur Smith to sort of pick up the slack there and provide that stability with his play calling. And I think he failed to do that. And so, Michael, I hope that answers your question. And we'll move the conversation on to talk a little bit more about the lack of talent in the Falcons offense, losing players like Julio Jones and losing players like Ridley, which I'm sure many people will say is the reason behind why there was so much volatility in the Falcons offense. But we'll talk about how, you know, Arthur Smith didn't really adjust to the talent that he had. And I think that's exemplified in some of the concerns with the running game. And we'll get into that as we continue today's episode. But before we get there, guys, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can find 3 different shows, 4 different personalities breaking down all of Atlanta, Georgia sports, as well as national headline making news, as well as you get the Locked On Braves postcast. Locked On Braves is breaking down every Atlanta Braves win and loss. So go check out Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast platform, including on YouTube. And guys, we talked about Blue Nile back during Mother's Day, but Mother's Day is not the only time of year when you can celebrate your special loved one with a classic, timeless piece of jewelry. Whether you're looking to pop the question, Blue Nile has these simple online tools to help you choose the shape, size, clarity, and style to handcraft that perfect one-of-a-kind engagement ring for your special someone. Or maybe you're looking for something a little less permanent and you have trouble choosing. Blue Nile has the jewelry experts on hand 24/7 via phone, via chat, to find that memorable gift that fits everyone's budget. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On Sports listeners get $50 off any purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement. Just use promo code Locked On. That's code Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. So shop stress-free and find your forever peace by going to BlueNile.com today. So, guys, we're talking about running the football now, and running the football is less about play calling and more about execution, right? It's about getting a hat on the hat, you know, and if you do, you're going to have success. If you don't, you know, you're not. So that's not really on Arthur Smith, but I do think there are opportunities for the Falcons to make adjustments with how they ran the football that could have helped their offense. Now, I didn't chart the Falcons run offense throughout the entire season. I kind of started the first, you know, 4 or 5 games, and then, you know, select games where they were having success in the second half of the season. And one of the things I noted charting their rushing attack was that the Falcons essentially had 4 run plays, right? And they run slight variations off of these 4 plays, but it was basically the stretch play, the crack toss play, which are sort of the staples of the outside zone run scheme. There's inside zone and there's duo. Duo is a gap run that's very similar to inside zone, where you're seeing those double teams on those runs between the tackles up the middle and whatnot. Now, they did mix in a little bit of counter, which is another gap run play in the second half of the season. But the core of their run offense was basically stretch, crack toss, inside zone, and duo. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with only having a limited, you know, run playbook. And when it comes to the run game, having only 4 plays, you know, I think it just boils down to if you execute, and the Falcons really weren't great at execute. And this gets back to the analogy that I often have used over the last several months, which is that Arthur Smith is a chef at a restaurant that has a limited menu, only has 5 items on the menu. And for those of you that aren't regular listeners that need a reminder of what that analogy is, it's essentially like Arthur Smith is opening up a restaurant. He is a chef, you know, and they ask him, what are you going to put in your menu? He's like, we're going to have 5 things, 2 appetizers, 2 entrees, and a dessert. We're going to master the fundamentals of cooking these 5 things, and we're not going to expand our menu. We're not going to be exotic. We're just going to have, you know, these 5 things, and we're going to be great at them. People can get the best soup, the best steak, the best, you know, tiramisu or whatever it is those 5 items are on the menu. And again, I think that's fine if you're executing, you know, that tiramisu at a high level, if you're executing that steak at a high level. And it's also fine when you're in Tennessee, when you have Derrick Henry. And I guess the analogy with what Derrick Henry brings to that menu is Derrick Henry's the MSG, right? He's that sprinkling of MSG that you're putting in all the soup and all the stuff and making everything taste better. And you just didn't necessarily have that. And I think you needed to make an adjustment, you know, maybe put a little bit more salt in the food or whatever case may be, if we're continuing the metaphor. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say like these adjustments would have meant the difference between the Falcons having the bottom 5 rushing attack that they did have a year ago and suddenly becoming a top 5 rushing attack. But you do want to see your coaches elevating players, right? And elevating the talent that they had. And one example of this is, to me, it felt like the most effective run play and the most reliable run play that the Falcons had was their crack toss, particularly when they ran it to Caleb McGarry's side of the offense. But it did seem like so often the Falcons were very reluctant to run that most weeks. And, you know, I compare that to a previous offensive coordinator, not Derek Cutter, but actually Steve Sarkisian, that when you go back, especially that 2018 season when Devontae Freeman was injured, they basically ran crack toss all the time with Tevin Coleman as their lead tailback. And I recall Falcon fans often complaining about it during those years. But I actually think it made perfect sense given Tevin Coleman's skill set. You know, Tevin Coleman being a speed guy, you want to get him out on the edge to maximize that speed. And the thing with Tevin Coleman was playing, you know, in the sort of stretch play that is a staple of the outside zone run scheme, you know, that play kind of relies on you having vision and lateral agility to make some of these cuts. And those were 2 areas that Tevin Coleman wasn't really great at. Those were arguably his 2 biggest weaknesses. We often saw him, you know, he's fast, but he's also tripping on his feet. So being able to change direction was not ideal for his skill set. And we saw Sark sort of run that play into the ground. And I think that's a good example of a play caller adjusting his play calling to his personnel. And that was, you know, to me, that should have been a foundational part of the Falcons running game last year, you know, running crack toss to the right with Cordero Patterson. And they ran it from time to time, and it seemed to be very effective, but it wasn't something that I thought was a foundational part that they were running every single week. Another example I can use of not necessarily a lack of adjustment that Arthur Smith was making, but, you know, some conceptual issues that he had, where he would often use motion on his run plays, where he would have basically someone like Russell Gage motioning at the snap, you know, like he was going to take a jet sweep going this way, and they would run the play that way, or whatever the case may be. And for those of you listening to the audio version of the podcast, you're not necessarily seeing what I'm indicating, but imagine Russell Gage running and one to the left and the run play going to the right, or whatever the case may be. And the idea behind that is using that motion is you're going to get the linebackers to sort of key on that motion at the snap, and they're going to follow the motioning receiver, and that's going to delay them from reacting to the run to the right, and that's going to allow your running back and your offensive line and whatever to sort of get in position to make their blocks and be more effective. But defenses almost never bit on that misdirection when the Falcons would run it. And to me, the main reason why was because Arthur Smith never gave that motioning receiver the ball. And basically defense is all about reading your keys. It's all about also about playing your tendencies. And if you don't show that tendency, there's no reason for defenses to read that key and keep them honest. And I think they finally did run sort of a jet sweep to Olamide Zaccheaus in like week 13 against the Bucs, if I'm not mistaken. And it's one of those things like, you know, why did they wait that long? And, you know, the fact that they didn't really run that prior to that point, to me, was a mistake. It's not something that, you know, again, you're not running it 5 or 6 times every single week or whatever the case may be, running those jet sweeps. But by the time you get to week 13, it shouldn't be 0 times that you've run that. It should be like at least 6 or more. Like every other week, you should get at least one of those plays in there. And again, that's less of an adjustment issue and more of a concept issue. I think that's more indicative of Arthur Smith running a concept, but not really getting the point of that concept. And, you know, sort of that motion, that jet sweep stuff, to me would have been a perfect way to get Cordero Patterson integrated in the offense and maximize his skill set even further than what they did. And this was something that we kind of talked about in the lead up to that 49ers game, the differences between how the Falcons were using Cordero Patterson and how the 49ers were using Deebo Samuel. And Kyle Shanahan was being very creative with the different ways that he was getting Deebo Samuel. Meanwhile, you know, Cordero Patterson is being treated like a typical, you know, regular running back. And I know a lot of people give Arthur Smith a lot of credit for Cordero Patterson's breakout season, but I tend to not do that, you know, in part because, you know, of course I'm a hater, but, you know, I think a lot of it was, you know, Arthur Smith was just basically using basic stuff with Cordero Patterson, the run stuff, as well as the passing stuff, where it was like, you know, he's throwing simple checkdowns and simple screens and Cordero Patterson is turning him into big gains. And like, to me, the play caller doesn't deserve a lot of credit for, you know, Cordero Patterson stiff arming, you know, Logan Ryan into oblivion and turning a 5-yard check down into a 20 plus yard gain. You know, I don't think the play caller deserves all that much credit for when Cordero Patterson is, you know, beating, winning in the air against Kendall Fuller or Paulson Adebo on some of those fade balls that led to scores and whatnot. You know, I feel like every wide receiver runs those fade routes in this offense. It wasn't something specific that Arthur Smith was cooking up for Cordero Patterson. And so to me, the analogy is like, you know, people want to give Arthur Smith, the chef, credit for, you know, making this delicious meal. But in reality, it's Cordero Patterson's the waiter that's bringing the meal out to the table. And, you know, once he takes it out the kitchen, he's like sprinkling some MSG into the soup or whatever case and bringing it to your meal. And the person's like, oh, this is wonderful. My compliments to the chef or whatever case may be. But the reality is that the reason why that, you know, meal tastes good is because of Cordero Patterson, you know, sprinkling in, not anything the chef did. So, you know, I know the often used comeback is like, well, if Arthur Smith doesn't deserve credit, how come he was the first guy to figure out how to use them? And it's like, well, yeah, because he had to, like, he didn't have a choice, right? Like, you know, Josh McDaniels didn't need to dial up a ton of plays for Cordero Patterson because he had Gronk and he had, you know, Julian Edelman and all these other factors. You know, Norv Turner didn't have to make Cordero Patterson the central part of the offense because he had Adrian Peterson and Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen or whatever the case may be. But like, we got to this point with the Falcons that, you know, basically it was Cordero Patterson or else. And again, all to me, most of the credit, let's say 90% of the credit goes to Cordero Patterson. Only 10%, in my opinion, goes to Arthur Smith. But, you know, we'll leave it there. This will end the sort of complaining part of today's episode. And speaking of, you know, wide receivers like Cordero Patterson getting catching fades, you know, now we'll get into the part where we're, you know, being more optimistic about this offense under Arthur Smith, because now it seems like he has more guys that can win on those fade routes that he is going to call. And we'll get into why, some of the reasons why this Falcons offense will be good and better this season as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. But before we get there, guys, I do want to let you know about a new survey that we have up at lockedonpodcast.com. It's going to help us out, help make all these Locked On shows, including Locked On Falcons, better. You tell us what you like or don't like about these various shows, and it's not going to take too much time for you. And you'll also get a chance to, you know, qualify if you complete the survey for one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Again, that's lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thank you in advance. And guys, I want to tell you about Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. Built Bar is even better than a candy bar because Built Bars not only taste good, they're good for you. They're low in sugar, low in calories, low in carbs, high in protein, high in fiber. Built Bar has brought back their caramel brownie flavor. That's that chewy, chocolatey goodness. You know, it's a dessert that has 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 4 grams of sugar. And it's in fact better than any dessert that you've ever had. So caramel brownie is promised to rock your world. So go ahead, try it, or find your other favorite flavors by heading over to built.com. And when you do, use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off at built.com. So, you know, a lot of why I'm criticizing Arthur Smith is because, you know, I feel like a big talking point for him when he first took the job here in Atlanta was, you know, he's like, I'm going to adjust my offense to fit this Falcons personnel. And essentially, I think he failed to do that. And I don't think he deserves to get a pass for that, right? Like, essentially, he's breaking a promise, right? And so, like, I'm not going to, you know, pass the buck when it comes to that. But one of the things that I often discussed last year with Smith was when he took the job, and one of my biggest concerns with him as a play caller was how much of his success was, you know, Derrick Henry being Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown being A.J. Brown. And, you know, from what I saw, a lot of his success in Tennessee was that, because that's kind of the offense that he ran, you know, and the sort of basic offense that really relied on the Cordero Pattersons and the Kyle Pitts of the world to basically elevate his play calling, just like Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, I think, often elevated his play calling. But I think the good thing about this offseason and the moves that the additions that the Falcons have made is that he's now got his guys, right? Calvin Ridley wasn't, you know, the dig route was one of his worst routes. And so asking him to do that sort of stuff was not great. But asking Drake London and Bryan Edwards to run that stuff, to me, makes a lot more sense. And one of the things I often said was, you know, basically the outside receivers, all they do is run digs and fades, right? And what do Drake London and Bryan Edwards do best? Certainly fades, those contested catches on those vertical routes down the field. Whether those guys can sort of maximize the amount of digs that Arthur Smith likes to run remains to be seen. And for those of you that don't know what a dig is, it's basically an in-breaking route, an intermediate in-breaking route. And, you know, we saw A.J. Brown, we've seen Julio Jones catch a million of those and turn them upfield and turn them into big plays. In turning those 12-yard digs into, you know, 40-yard gains and whatever the case may be. London didn't do a ton of that at USC as their sort of X receiver last year. Bryan Edwards did, you know, some of that in Las Vegas last year, playing the X role. And, you know, theoretically, they should be very good at that, given their physical running style and how good they are after the catch. And so you're hoping to see more of those 12-yard digs turn into explosive plays. Now, I still am skeptical on whether or not those guys can be as good running those digs as A.J. Brown was running those digs when he was arguably one of the most dynamic and explosive wide receivers in the league for the last 2 years. And, you know, you look at some of the data from, you know, Football Outsiders looking at the dig route, and he was like, you know, really outclassing everybody. It was like him and Julio were like 1 and 2 in some of those years. But, you know, I still think both London and Edwards should be significantly better than what Ridley and Gage were when it came to running those dig routes. So even if they're not necessarily elite in that regard, they are certainly a big step in the right direction. Now, when you look at the running game, you know, I still think the Falcons are going to still be heavily reliant on a running game to sort of protect their offensive line, you know, on early downs and prevent this offensive line and some of the concerns we have for this unit getting into some third and longs. Arthur Smith has already indicated that that's one of the ways that he's hoping to make the offensive line look better with his play calling and not putting them in positions to fail by getting them into third and eights and third and tens and whatever the case may be. And so what's interesting about last year's offensive line heading into this year is 2021's was the first time really in like two decades since I've been looking at it where the Falcons basically had the same starting five for every single game, and it did not result in not only the offensive success, but the team success. Like almost every year where the Falcons had the same starting five or close to the same starting five start every single game, you know, like those were the years like 2012 and 2016, you know, where they went really far those years. And last year, it didn't really manifest that way. And so if you want to sort of make the case for why it makes sense for the Falcons to run it back with the same starting five, which has been a point of criticism that we've often leveled here on Locked On Falcons and elsewhere, it's linked to this idea that, you know, they will be able to maintain that continuity and that cohesion that you need up front, and it will manifest itself in 2022, even though it didn't manifest itself in 2021. And so that hopefully will lead to the ground game being much, much better. And then on top of that, you sort of talk about all the lessons that Arthur Smith learned from his first year on the job, you know, doing a better job integrating some of these concepts, making some of these adjustments that we just discussed. And so the idea is, you know, if he had a 5-item menu last year, you know, this year he'll be able to expand that menu to 10 items or more, or whatever the case may be. But even in a world where there isn't some massive expansion to his menu, theoretically, he has the guys that are much more capable, much better suited to, quote unquote, cook when, you know, He runs those same five items this year, right? You know, basically the same five items. That soup is going to taste a lot better this year with the people that are in the kitchen than it was a year ago. So those are generally my selling points when I look ahead about why and the reasons why I expect this Falcons offense to be improved. Despite all my criticisms of this, I do expect this offense to be improved. Again, the question to me is how much improved? Like, I'm not expecting them to go from bottom five to top five or anything like that, but I certainly think they should be capable, and it's certainly achievable for them to be middle of the pack this season. And so if you look at it and say, okay, maybe they're able to go from what, bottom five in explosive plays. And if they add, you know, one more explosive play per game, that's going to put them closer to middle of the league in terms of their explosiveness. And, you know, one more play per game, that's maybe like 15 added drives over the course of the season, that results in 60 points. That's the difference between going from 26th in scoring a year ago to 19th in scoring this upcoming season. And we haven't even really gotten into the red zone issues. And again, I think some of the struggles that they had and the reasons why they were 24th in red zone was in part due to Arthur Smith's, you know, vanilla play calling when it came to that, which was something that he was known for being acceptable and exceptional at, in Tennessee. So hopefully if they're even league average there, that will also spark some significant improvement for the Falcons, let alone being the top 10 red zone offenses that they were in Tennessee. And I think a lot of that was owed to, you know, Derrick Henry's running ability, but certainly they should be much better than 24th this upcoming season. So I sit here thinking it's more than fair to criticize his shortcomings, his failures from last year, but I don't think it's the final word on him as a play caller. I think this year is really when we find out what Arthur Smith is as a play caller, as a head coach. Like I said, the thing often on this podcast that we don't know if he's good, right? Like I think a lot of people operate under the assumption that he's good. I don't operate under an assumption. I think this year we will find out if he's good. And because I just don't think there's going to be any more excuses that he doesn't have his guys, or at least that excuse will not be able to use. And now I think the issue he's going to run into is he's going to be heavily reliant on a number of rookies and a number of new faces on offense. And I think that's still going to lead to some growing pains this upcoming season, which is why I'm not expecting, you know, a complete, you know, massive upgrade and suddenly this is one of the best offenses in the league or anything like that. But I think as those guys grow and develop, we will see things, you know, a little bit more cohesion for this unit. But I do think all that being said, this is still ultimately a make break year for him. And the question is going to be, what conversations are we having 6 months from now? Are we still going to be talking about the lack of adjustments? Are we going to be talking about the lack of creativity, talking about his inability to get guys like Pitts and Patterson and London and Edwards and whoever else, you know, heavily involved in this offense? Are we still talking about, man, this guy still only has five items on his menu, right? If those are, if we're still having these same conversations 6 months from now, you know, that's going to be, to say the least, very problematic for this team moving forward into the future. But I think if we see the flashes, again, not expecting the consistency that you get from veteran team, but we see the flashes from some of these young players, I think that gives us a lot more hope that as those young players begin to add more experience, we'll start to see the cohesion and the consistency come together. And in the future, in 2023 and beyond, we will see this offense be maximized, you know, under the various pieces that we have then. So those are the things to keep an eye on. But I think you have to not just sort of ignore where we're coming from in 2021. So that's it, guys. I'm done complaining about Arthur Smith, and we'll just sort of see how things develop. There's still a lot of things that I could have sat here and nitpicked, but I'll leave that aside. I'll leave those for future episodes and future tangents and whatnot. So that will do it for us here. I hope you guys, you know, feel, you know, like you're a little bit more informed on at least some of my issues with the Falcons offense. Of course, I'm more than welcome to hear some of the things that you thought went well for the Falcons that I failed to mention on, or some of the other concerns that you had for the Falcons offense that you're hoping to see more from Arthur Smith this upcoming season. And as you, you know, leave a comment or, you know, hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons or send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. You know, we thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. You know, check out Locked On Sports Atlanta as your second listen, Locked On Braves, Locked On Hawks, whatever the case may be, Locked On Bulldogs, or you could check out Locked On NFL if you want to get the lowdown on all the latest going on in the NFL. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on with Deshaun Watson. And if you're the type of person that's wondering, you know, how much of a bullet the Falcons dodged, You know, with that regard, go check out Locked On Browns, Locked On NFL. We'll certainly have you covered for a lot of that stuff. So you can find all those podcasts on your preferred podcast platform. Guys, I appreciate it. Tomorrow, we will probably wind up answering more of the listener questions. That will give me another day to finalize my D'Angelo Malone film study, and we should be able to wrap up the week with the scouting report on D'Angelo Malone for tomorrow's episode. So, guys, I really do appreciate it. Till then.